Welcome, everybody, to the Stoke It Up podcast, a podcast encouraging you in your journey with God. I'm Alan Stoddard, and I am here with Kenneth Priest. And of course, if you've been tuning in, we've been stoking up conversations about sermon-based small groups. But today, we jump into a unique sliver of the educational process in a church. And it's a standalone, maybe, called The Pastor as Minister of Education. And so, Kenneth, welcome back to the podcast, brother. It's good to see you. We were just talking about how both of us are working for Chick-fil-A now. Kenneth in the brand new one in Hawaii. And then I'm working at Chick-fil-A here in Granbury. So we're going to do a podcast at some point called something like Pastoring from Chick-fil-A. I don't know what we'll call it.
That's right.
But exciting. These are exciting but busy days. So we've been a little slow to get to this podcast, but we're going to get our schedules worked out. But this is an important topic that you brought up years ago and that I stumbled on just because I realized, okay, I'm in smaller churches and I've got to be my own minister of education. So I want to ask you right out of the box, Kenneth, what happened to the minister of education?
Yeah. So, you know, that's a great question, Alan. We look back historically and, you know, and I don't know that I'm the right one to answer exactly what happened to it, but I did see the trends taking place. You know, when you and I were in seminary, there were three of us that were training to be a minister of education. And so me and a couple of other guys were the only ones that really saw the educational ministry in that world, in that role. And so it had been falling away in churches. And a lot of it shifted because of title change, right? So you have the minister of discipleship, the family ministry leader, the spiritual formation minister, all these different titles to try to encapsulate what the minister of education was or is. And honestly, and even in the smaller churches, we moved to this title of executive pastor. Everybody wanted to be an executive pastor, which used to be just in the mega churches. But we started saying, well, you're kind of doing everything at the church. So we're going to call you the executive pastor. And you know, it's a little bit of actually a detriment to the church when we start changing all of this. In fact, I remember Bill Taylor, who was with Lifeway for a number of years. And I remember him doing a session, and this was, gosh, you know, almost 20 years ago, right around 20 years ago, maybe 22 years ago. He did a session of, if I were to do it all over again, I would not let them change my title from the Minister of Education. And he just kind of talked about that. They changed his title, be executive pastor. And, you know, it just kind of, when you start changing these titles, it takes away from the role, the genuine role of a minister of education and what he does, what he's supposed to do. And I think honestly, it becomes a bit of a distraction from the work of the educational ministry of the church. And so historically, we've just lost that emphasis. We've lost that role of the minister of education and the need for the minister of education. And I think part of it, honestly, is a bit ego. It, you know, all these guys that want a bigger title, want a better title. They want to be seen as a pastor of the church. They want to, you know, and, you know, the longer I'm in ministry, the longer that I'm serving churches, I'm looking and saying, you know, we got to get over it. Right. God's called us to do what he's called us to do. And your title absolutely does not matter. Titles are man-made, not God-made. And so, you know, we've got to focus on what we're called to do. And in this conversation we're having, the whole point of the pastor being his own minister of education, you know, it's designed with that mindset of the single staff, the bivocational pastor, or the smaller church ministry that, you know, all too often, even as pastors, we want to pass off to somebody else. We're too anxious to hire somebody to come do a job that honestly we could manage and do ourselves if we were just organized and knew what to do. And that's the point of our topic today, is us to talk through what exactly do you need to do in order to pull this off.
So what does a minister of education do?
Yeah, so that's a great question too, Alan. And that's why a lot of the titles got changed to discipleship, spiritual formation, because The Minister of Education is supposed to be responsible for all age-graded ministries in the life of the church. And so that's why this whole disciple-making position kind of became, so the Minister of Discipleship kind of became the first nomenclature that was used to say, you know, you're responsible for discipling the generations or making sure the generations are discipled. So you're not really a minister of education, you're a minister of discipleship. But honestly, the educational ministry is more than just disciple making. Disciple making is key, it's foundational, and it's fundamental, but it's not the only thing that you're responsible for. And so the Minister of Education historically has been that person to oversee the age-graded ministries from birth to senior adult, to make certain that a church has a strategy for discipling people through small group ministries. So whether you're using Sunday school, life groups, adult Bible study, small groups, whatever you want to call it, and then making sure that there's preschool children and student people that are doing the exact same thing so that we can kind of walk people through a pathway from birth to senior adult, that they're engaging in some type of small group ministry. But in addition to that, there is this administrative function that a minister of education does, where he's not just looking at the disciple making element, but he's looking at all of the tools, all of the equipment, all of the space that you have, and knowing how to evaluate and assess what do we have and how can we best utilize what we have for God's glory.
I remember when we were brand new, I was praying before we came on, and I was just thanking the Lord that after 25 years, I think it's been 2002, but you and I met in 1996. Whatever right. amount of years that is. And after all these years, I can't believe we're even saying that. My gosh. But we still love the Lord. We still love the ministry. And we've both been through some hard knocks in churches. And that could knock some people out and have knocked some people out and have attempted to knock us out.
Right.
But we're still going. Well, in the beginning, I remember you coming alongside me out at the Dial Baptist Church. We ran That's 35 right. people at that church, and you and Ken Hemphill was the seminary president where we went. Everybody knows he's a Sunday school guy. If you know Ken Hemphill, Sunday school, small groups guy, and he's the pastor type. And then you got Daryl Eldridge, who was there also, who's the educational dean there, and he discipled you and I in a small group for seven That's right. years. But we went out to that church, and you were crazy enough to influence me enough to go, hey, pay attention to that Sunday school, and let's grow it. Let's see if God will grow it if we pay attention to these things. And we ended up, I remember we had 68 people in church one day. And I think that Sunday we had 60 plus people in Sunday school. Now, this was a farm church. This church was in the middle of nowhere. And I'm telling that story to say, it's why focus? Now, I just told a story answering it, but I want to ask you, why is this area of ministry important to the church?
Yeah. So yeah, your illustration's the perfect reason as to why, right? It is the engagement. So it goes back to the sermon-based small group process. And we talked about this a few weeks ago when you start thinking about moving from crowd to community to core, right? This becomes a key element for developing community. And so again, our nomenclature, so we're Sunday school, life group, small group, whatever you're calling it, as long as there's intentionality, as long as it is done with that mindset of it is Bible study, but it is also community driven. It is designed to generate Christian. We're not talking about the community you live in. We're talking about generating Christian community within this group, that whole Acts 2 type of thing where we're coming together, focusing on prayer and the study of God's word and really living life together. That's the importance of this. When we focus on those things, that's the result is that the church grows. And this, I believe, part of the decline in the church today is a result of the drifting away from a person on staff at the church who focuses on doing this. And so I train pastors to go in and do this for themselves as a part of the revitalization work that they do. And this all of a sudden, you know, God blesses the work of the hands, right? They're out there doing the work that needs to be done, the work God's called them to do. They're intentionally focusing on the needs that they have as a congregation to organizationally structure their church in such a way that needs are met, outreach is taking place, Bible study is happening, prayer for one another is happening, and genuine biblical community is taking place, that genuine koinonia. I don't remember if we talked a bit about this in one of our sessions. You know, people get hung up on koinonia on the fellowship aspect. But if you actually take that word koinonia and you trace it through the New Testament, what you actually see is biblical koinonia moves beyond fellowship. It moves to missional engagement. And so genuine koinonia, I think oftentimes the church kind of, we talk koinonia and we talk fellowship, but we forget that the whole point of that word, when Paul uses it in some of his writings, it goes on, it talks about that the people, the koinonia, then engaged missionally, right? And so that's the real purpose of focusing on this. And so I think that the loss, the decline of the church has resulted because we're not focusing on these key tenets of the church that the minister of education used to be the one to make sure these things happen. And so when we took that away and we said, hey, here's a minister of discipleship or minister of spiritual formation, and they're really just dealing with the spiritual side. And that's the most important part, the spiritual side. But a part of that spiritual side is saying, we've got to create space for people. So this goes to Flake's formula. You know, I wrote a book, Revitalizing the Church Through Flake's Formula. And so, and you can put a link on there of how to order that through us and get them a copy, because you and I both have copies we could send out. But the whole point of all that is the church has got to be organized in order to grow, in order to reach people, in order to disciple people. You have to have a disciple-making strategy to do that. And so if all you're doing is worried about the disciple-making side and you're not dealing with the organizational structure side, you don't know what to do with people when you reach people. There's no plan. And so that's the necessity for doing this.
So if small groups are a part of our disciple making, and they absolutely are, when I go to a church, I am dissatisfied just to go to the big group gathering. I love the big group, but I'm dissatisfied to stay there forever. It won't work for me, because I know, and where you just said, where fellowship becomes what Paul would call partnership. Koinonia fellowship in Philippians 1:5, the King James translates it fellowship, but most other Bibles took that same Greek word koinonia and said it's partnership. And it's right, because Paul was thanking the church for upping their game and becoming a part of the mission.
Absolutely.
So when we think about a pastor, what would you say to a pastor right now who says, I don't have time to do that? Why would we tell a pastor, you've got to pay attention to your small group disciple making, and I'm going to use a technical term, apparatus or strategy or structure. We mean that in a life-giving way. Why should a pastor pay attention to that?
Well, let me ask it this way, Alan, as a pastor, what if I told you that in 2 weeks, if you were to give me 2 weeks of your year, 80 hours of your year, you could not only organize your church, your Sunday school, small group, life group, whatever, you can not only organize it, but you could manage, maintain, and be able to watch it grow. Is that worth the investment?
Absolutely.
So you're going to give me 2 weeks, you're going to give me 80 hours. Now I'm going to take that and say, okay, instead of me taking 2 weeks in a row, 80 hours in a row, what I want you to do is I want you to divide that out over the course of a year, right? So you're going to give me an hour here, an hour there. You're going to find 80 days during the year to give me 1 hour of time, right? That's all it's going to take in order to do this. And the reality is you're going to take a few hours on the front end to get organized, to get it set up. And then you're going to spend about 30 minutes a week managing this. And then once a month, you're going to have 1 hour that you take that you're actually going to spend with other leaders, investing in them so that this loop happens. You're creating a reproducible model. You're able to know what's happening in the life of the church and the life of every single small group so that you can advance the gospel and you actually have a kingdom strategy for how to do this. That's what we're talking about here. So no, you don't have the time, but if I could get you set up within just a matter of a few hours and then turn that into just give me 30 minutes a week and then an additional 1 hour a month to meet with others, we can get you moving in the right direction in order to create the culture that's needed in order for the pastor to be his own minister of education.
I would add to that, pastors and leaders, as you're listening, but especially any pastor, you may go, well, I'm not educated in that area. I wasn't either. Kenneth is, but I wasn't either. All my friends, I just started pilfering off of their experiences in education. You don't have to be a high educated person to do this in that area. And I would say that you don't have time not to do this, if I can say it that way. This is so important because if the educational ministry of the church doesn't get paid attention to, it won't produce the fruit that you want out of those ministries. Let's say kids' church. I was sitting there thinking about kids' church. Kenneth, he threw me a curveball. I didn't know he was going to say all that. He said the entire educational part of the church. And so that would involve kids' church. And so, pastor, you got to know what's going on in kids' church. You got to know what if the gospel is being shared, how's the invitation being given? What are they being taught? Are they being taught in a way that's life-giving, or is it just somebody getting through the curriculum? And it may be somebody getting through the curriculum. So how are you going to motivate them to really become life-giving in the delivery of that? And that is where I will say, if you're a pastor and you have either experience or education, you do have what it takes to equip your small group leaders. And what I'm doing is stealing your excuse for saying, well, that's it. You know what it is, Locke Kenneth? Pastors, now I can talk as I'm. We don't want to do it. We want to farm it out. And we want somebody that's. And okay, now here's where I think was a negative. I think this whole structural thing of having another pastor do this has set us up to fail, because in a smaller or mid-sized church where you can't, well, you can't afford to hire someone to do it, or that's not what you need at that moment. And now we've set it up to where the pastor has to, it's kind of like he has to look this way to do that. I used to think, okay, I'm not good at that. Well, one of the reasons why I called you back in the day, I was always calling you. I'm like, hey, I don't know how to do this. What do I do? And you go, here, do this. And I'd go do it and it'd work for the most part. And a pastor's, I think, sometimes think, well, I'm not gifted in doing it. You don't have to be gifted even. You just have to obey the Great Commission.
Right.
So I'm throwing out that we don't have time to not do it. Now, what would be, I'm thinking of Harry Pylon. Let me ask you another question. So I read somewhere, and I may butcher the quote, but I remember, I think it was Harry Pylon who said, here's how you can tell the health or the temperature of your Sunday school, he would call it, but we would just say any small group system, any small group strategy, is whether you do leadership meetings or not.
Right.
I think he said that. And I got a bunch of paper. I think I got it from you back in the day of all these things that he used to give out. He was the king of the little worksheet things. They all look cool and you fill in the blank. What do you think of that? You got to do leadership training. What would you say a pastor should do as a bare minimum? Now I've given one, but what's that look like?
Right. Well, and that's that 1 hour a month that I asked for. Right. So, you know, old school was every week there was a leadership meeting. Wednesday nights, the pastor would meet with all of his Sunday school small group teachers. He would basically teach them the lesson so that they were better prepared to teach the lesson on Sunday morning. And in our sermon based small group methodology, I'm not opposed to that. That is asking more time of you to do that. But it does allow the pastor to be able to communicate, hey, here's what I'm preaching. Here's some things that I'm probably going to say. Here's some things that may drive some questions. Hey, here's some tricky theological issues. And so you can deal with that on a weekly basis. But at very minimum, you're dealing with that on a monthly basis. You say, okay, guys, for the next 4 weeks, as we're preaching through the book of Acts, We're going to cover chapters, you know, 3 through 6, and here's the key tenets. Here's what you need to be cautious of, and just, you know, what questions have you already seen coming up? So you deal with that. But then a part of that meeting, and that's kind of this whole getting your small groups organized in such a way, is to have the conversation of what is going on in your small group ministry. See, as a church grows, the pastor needs to hear what the needs of the church are. He can't handle 150 relationships. Now, look, you may know their names, but you and I both know you're not in relationship with 150 people. You've got a core. It's usually going to be the leaders, the deacons. You know, you're going over to their house for dinner. They're coming to your place. You're engaged with them in actual relationship. But then all these other church members, they're fringe to you relationally. They're not a direct access. That's where the small group ministry is key. You meet with those leaders and they're able to say, hey, man, you know, Alan and Gina are dealing with this. Alan's probably going to get laid off at the end of the month, and this is going to be a hardship, and you need to be aware of that, Pastor. And, you know, you're about to start this building campaign, and we got three families losing their jobs. Is this the right time to do a sermon on giving extra money? You know, whatever it is, they become the information source to the pastor. They let you know what's going on in the life of the church. So the church gets bigger and bigger. They become the lifeblood of communication. This is also where you're hearing what the needs are, which should help drive your preaching to be more relationally connected, to be more life application oriented, because, hey, now you know contextually who am I actually preaching to and what's taking place here. And that's where you're going to hear more and more people coming up going, man, I thought that sermon was written just for me. Right. And they know that they've not talked to you directly, but these leaders are the ones funneling that information to you. So this becomes a way of organizing and communication in the church. But then it's also the idea of, so whether you're talking Sunday school space issue or home group space issue, right, this is where the leaders are saying, hey, man, our home group, you know, our living room seats 20 and we're cramming 25 in there. We got to find another house that we can create a new unit in and take half the group over there. So who else in our area could start a home group and let us kind of create a second group and be able to you know, create that new unit and move forward from there. So if you're not having these conversations, and as the pastor, if you're not involved in that, then you don't have a clue what's happening. And so, you know, the whole 80% rule, it's true in a home, it's true in the church. And so when that home group is running 80% capacity of that room, you know, it's technically full. And so as the pastor, you got to have a strategy for what we're going to do to create that new group in that same area so that the people don't feel like, you know, the last thing you want to do is, hey, Alan, I know your group's running 25. So what we're going to do, we're going to take 12 of y'all. We want you to drive to the other side of town. Right. I got a leader ready on the other side of town. So send 12 people over there and y'all stay where you are. No, man, they're all going to keep coming to your house. And so you got to find somebody right next door, just around the corner, meeting at the same time, somebody that's within that group. And so everything is organized around this strategy. And it all happens because the pastor is pulling the leaders together and saying, here's the difficult theological issues. Here's what I'm preaching on. Number two, what is it that you need? What are you hearing? What are the needs of the congregation? Okay, number three, let's talk about where your class is. How's it growing and how's it going? Are there people visiting? Are there people you're pulling in? What does this look like for you?
Man, that was all gold. I'm sitting there thinking, I used to do once before we started groups, and we used a semester system, and once before we started our groups, before the fall and before the spring, winter, we would do a lunch, and I would invite every small group leader that would come. I'd say, please come. I'm going to buy you lunch. We can meet somewhere, or I would have somebody, I cater it and do it at the church. And then I'm thinking, man, I should have did more of that. Pastor, what I was thinking of when Kenneth was talking reminded me of this. When people know the pastor's a disciple maker, they have a different respect for you than you're just the preacher and pastor. It's amazing what happens with that. I can't encourage you enough to become your own minister of education if you don't have one. And then if you do have one, you need to be connected into all this stuff anyway, because the people will see you as detached. I remember many pastors in the early days would say, I go to Sunday school. They didn't just stay in their office. They went to a class or a group. And this connects to our book and the content we've dealt with some already in the last podcast, extending the sermon in the small group. Pastor, if you want your sermon to be extended, not just in the small group life, but in the small group leaders, you could disciple those small group leaders. And really what Kenneth is saying is that's what we, you and I and all of us should do.
Absolutely.
When we think about this, I used to do also, I think when you're meeting once a month, if you know what, we've got time to do it. It's, you've got time to go, okay, once a month, I'm putting on my calendar while we're doing, for certain parts of the year at least, the high key areas of the fall and the spring for sure, I'm going to do a once a month lunch with my small group leaders. I'm not going to get them there all the time. I know that, but I'm going to do a once a month lunch just to do what Kenneth just said. That will be so life-giving. I can guarantee you they're not getting that from anywhere else. And these are people that are giving up time, treasure, effort, study, and they're your disciple makers. We must encourage them, mobilize them, and disciple them. That is just outstanding. Three things I would say of a small group, how to disciple small group leaders. Kenneth already mentioned the first one. Be relational. That's where the gospel and disciple making and small groups and just life is caught. We say it's caught and taught. We always say that. So this is the relational part. Just hang out with them. Just let them talk. And that's my problem is I want to go and I want to do number two. I want to be intentional. Okay, I'm going to teach you what Harry Pylon taught me. I took one class with Pylon, inductive Bible study, and I always want to use that stuff. It's good, but sometimes I need to just do what Kenneth said. Let's do the caught part. That's probably going to go further. But there could be the intentional part that he also mentioned. That's the taught part, the content. And then he also mentioned reproducing, giving it away. How are new groups going to be started? They're not going to just happen for the most part. If they do, it's usually not going to go well. We've got to have leadership involved with reproducing new small groups. So, pastors, we encourage you to take time to think this through, to evaluate your small group structure and strategy, to get involved in the Great Commission in a way that you are involved into small groups in the life of your church. So we wanted to do a shot in the arm on the pastor as a minister of education, because I don't hear anybody talking about it anymore. And I couldn't think of anybody better to talk about it with than Kenneth. So Kenneth, as we close this brief podcast today, what last encouragements would you give now that you've sat here for 30 minutes and thought it through and been thinking it through, and you think these things all the time? What would you say to pastors just to get them mobilized?
Yeah, well, the number one thing, you talk about the relational element, you need to know who all of your small group leaders are, from preschool to senior adult. You should make a list of every single one of them. And this goes back to those Dial Baptist days, right, Alan? So, you know, what we talk about, you pray for each of those leaders, you train them to pray for their class by name, and make sure that you know their story. And so, especially if you're a new pastor, you need to meet with every single one of these leaders and hear their story. Make certain that you know when they accepted Christ, when they were baptized. And so part of organizing the church is relating to the church and relating to these leaders so that you know the people that you're working with, the people you're serving with, so that as you are engaging them further, you know that their spiritual journey is moving in the direction it needs to move.
Amen to that. Well, we're going to wrap this up today. Thanks for coming on again, Kenneth. Happy days in Hawaii as you serve the church there and serve at Chick-fil-A. We're here in Granbury doing the same thing, trying to get stoked up on a church plan and serving at Chick-fil-A. And these are exciting. This is a great discussion. I think we'll end up doing this again sometime because we'll learn from it. But thanks for tuning in, everybody. We really appreciate it. If you have any questions at all, reach out to us in social media. We would love to come alongside you and walk you through what does it look like to revitalize your small group strategy. Many churches need it. We've been through it. We know it's grunt work. It's easier when you got somebody alongside of you. So reach out to us. And if you would like a copy of Kenneth's book, the Flakes formula. The first person that hits me up in Twitter and says, hey, I want the book, I'll give you one of Kenneth's books and we'll mail it. And then after that, if you'd like it, I'll put a link in the show notes. Again, Kenneth, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you, man. We'll see you next time.
All right. Sounds good. God bless.
Hey, man. Bless.